World News Today, brought to you by Continental Radio and Television Corporation, makers of Admiral Radio, America's smart set. By shortwave broadcast, direct from important overseas stations, as well as leading news centers of our own country, CBS correspondents are waiting to bring you a complete report from the world's political and battlefronts. But first, here's Doug Edwards.
The mighty Allied bombing attack against German-held Europe has raged on today nonstop, with American planes following up yesterday's record raid with another pounding of Western Germany. From North African bases, other Allied aircraft have struck fierce blows against the Germans in Greece and Crete. On the Italian mainland, the Allied 5th and the British 8th armies are increasing pressure on the enemy. And in Russia, German troops along the Dnieper line have been thrown back beyond shelling range of the river at several points. Now for further details on the fighting in the Mediterranean war zone, Admiral Radio takes you direct to Algiers. John Daly reporting.
The German offensive on the eastern end of the Italian front has failed. Yesterday, the British 8th Army advanced 2 miles above Chamouli as the German forces, recently reinforced with the 16th Panzer Division and ordered to retake Chamouli, retreated. At the same time, other units of the 8th Army, advancing from 1.5 to 4 miles along a 50-mile front, captured the towns of Guglielmese, Larino, Colletorto, Gambalesa, and San Marco. In central Italy, the 5th Army, advancing up both sides of the Colore River northwest of Benevento, occupied Ponte. The rest of the 5th Army line follows the south bank of the Colore and Volcano rivers for some 45 miles from Ponte to the shores of the Tyrrhenian Sea. Our patrols have crossed the Volturno in some strength and are active. There is little detailed news from the front, but heavy fighting appears to be going on just northeast of Capua, where American troops are trying to gain control of 2 hills from which German artillery command our crossings over the Volcano River from there to the sea. It is known that the Germans have moved another division into this area, and a major battle may be in the offing. But enemy resistance still consists of rearguard action by strong mobile forces equipped with artillery. General Tui Spatz's Northwest African Air Force gave strong support to our ground forces in Italy yesterday, and at the same time struck a crippling blow to the Luftwaffe in Greece and Crete, where the Germans have shown surprising air strength in the last week. Flying fortresses dropped tons of bombs on 4 of the principal airfields in Greece as liberators performed the same mission over the main German airfield on the island of Crete. Scores of enemy airplanes parked on the fields were destroyed. Runways were torn up and hangars and fuel and ammunition dumps set on fire. Officially described as highly successful, the raids appear to have caught the Germans by surprise. At only one field, Eloisis Airport outside Athens, did German fighters offer any opposition. 15 attacked the forts there. 5 German fighters were shot down. Besides this bag and the dozens of enemy planes destroyed on the ground, long-distance P-38 Lightnings found a fleet of Stuka dive bombers over the Scarpanto Straits near the island of Rhodes in the eastern Mediterranean. They shot down 15 of them, adding 1 Ju-88 for good measure. Our losses for the whole day's operation were just 1 fighter, which went down over the battle area in Italy. A supplement to the air communique released just a short while ago tells of 3 additional successful raids by liberators yesterday. The targets were airfields. 2 of them, Maritza and Scalato, are on the island of Rhodes. The other was the Heraklion airfield on Crete. All of our bombers returned safely to their bases from these raids. They met no fighter opposition, and the bombing is described as very successful. This is John Daly at Allied Force Headquarters in North Africa, returning you to CBS in New York.
More news in just a moment, but first here's Warren Sweeney with a word from Admiral Radio.
Somewhere in England today, there are 8 American boys to whom radio, equipment like that now being built by Admiral, has acquired a new meaning. Here's how it happened. For 150 miles on the way back from a bombing run over San Jose, the crew of a battered flying fortress fought to keep their ship aloft. Guns, ammunition, even parachutes were tossed overboard to lighten the load. But still the fort sank lower and lower. Realizing they couldn't make it, the crew gathered in the radio room and braced themselves for a plunge into the sea. With a shattering crash they struck. Water gushed in through the ball turret, and the crew quickly climbed out over the wings into their 2 life rafts. No sooner had they pushed off when one of the men, much to the astonishment of the others, suddenly dived overboard. Bobbing in the water like a cork next to the sinking plane was their portable radio, the only means of bringing help. No one can tell, of course, who built that particular radio, but Admiral would like to believe that it came from an Admiral assembly line. All night long, the boys took turns in sending out an SOS. And by the following afternoon, they were back safe in England. Yes, radio is playing many dramatic roles in this war. Roles in which Admiral-built equipment is being featured on many fronts. Putting electronic weapons of offense and defense into the hands of our fighting men is the wartime duty of your peacetime admiral, America's smart set. Now, here once again is Doug Edwards.
Admiral Radio takes you now to CBS London. Larry Lesser reporting.
Londoners on their Sunday stroll through Hyde Park and Kensington Gardens today watched the flying fortresses gather in formation high overhead. The heavy U.S. bombers were on their way to Germany for the third day running. No details of today's raid are yet in. The skies over Germany today have also been penetrated by fast reconnaissance planes. They took pictures of the damage done in the brilliant American bomber attack yesterday on Poland and East Prussia. The newly developed pictures show that yesterday the flying fortresses scored a great victory over their enemies, the high-flying Focke-Wulf 190s, both in the air and on the ground. For 91 German fighters were downed yesterday trying to protect their assembly plant at Marienburg. And today, photographs show that the force completely wrecked the huge factory where one half of all the Focke-Wulf fighters made in Germany were assembled. Smoke screens still obscured the German naval base at Gdynia when reconnaissance planes went over today. But through the veil of smoke, it could be seen that yesterday's attack damaged a German liner and set three other ships afire. On the British home front, the chief subject of debate this week has been the question whether Britain should keep its people regimented after the war in order to aid economic recovery. Just in case some persons may think regimentation or labor mobilization, as it's called here, has not been as serious in Britain as it has been in the totalitarian states, some figures were released today. They show that the Ministry of Labor has prosecuted no less than 12,000 persons who refused to go to work where they were sent. In most cases, the magistrates imposed fines on these sturdy individualists. But at least 1,000 men were sent to prison. 128 women also went there. There has been talk that women who refuse to work be examined by psychologists. But one English magistrate said today that these were only good time girls anyway. And to put psychologists onto them was not only unnecessary, but a lot of rubbish. And now back to New York and Doug Edwards.
Allied planes continue to attack German airfields in the Balkans. For the latest developments in the Middle East, Admiral Radio takes you to CBS Cairo, James Fleming reporting.
There are ships that inspire a lasting affection among the people for whom they sail. Such a craft was the Queen Olga, a Greek destroyer with a memorable war record. She sailed for 72,000 miles since the fall of Greece, continuing the fight against the Nazi spoilers of her homeland. Last January, in company with five British destroyers, she helped destroy 13 enemy vessels. And at many other crucial moments in the Mediterranean, the Queen Olga pitched in to bombard enemy ammunition dumps, supply columns, and batteries. Today in Cairo, Alexandria, and in Greece, there's a great sadness. For the Queen Olga is no more. The mascot of the valiant Greek Navy, the good luck ship as she was called, has been sunk by enemy action. Her captain was killed by the spray of machine gun bullets that covered the bridge of his vessel. He and his crew members who died with him have been buried at sea. Buried in the Greek waters they fought to defend. But the war in the eastern Mediterranean goes on. Last night, Allied bombers went after enemy shipping in the vicinity of Kos Island in the Dodecanese. A medium-sized cargo ship was hit and left caulking, and an escort vessel was successfully attacked. No Allied aircraft is missing from these operations. Broadcasting from Cairo this week to his countrymen in Yugoslavia, young King Peter, who now makes his headquarters here, urged the dissident groups within his homeland to refrain from internal struggle, and said that he was saddened by an insufficient harmony among Yugoslavs both within his country and abroad. But whatever their parochial differences, the Yugoslav patriot fighters continue to offer large-scale resistance to the Germans in the Balkans. Reports reaching Cairo, supplemented by the broadcasts of the Free Yugoslav Radio from Tiflis in Russia, tell of intense fighting all along the Adriatic coastline. Important railway lines between Austria and Italy, now more than ever important to the Germans, have nearly all been cut. The Nazi forces on the Istrian Peninsula, That's the piece of land jutting out from Trieste and Fiume are now isolated as a result of this guerrilla resistance. The Nazi method of fighting back is to send daily 6-bomber sorties against defenseless villages. Unable to meet the Yugoslav soldiers, they take their reprisals against the civilian population. This is James Fleming and Farrell. I return you now to New York and Doug Edwards.
And now for news on the home front, Admiral Radio takes you to CBS Washington. Robert Lewis reporting. The suggestion is being made here today that a joint House-Senate committee be established to keep Congress in touch with the administration's post-war plans. Unless some sort of a middleman group is set up, Representative Dirksen says, the end of the war will come and will be called upon to wrestle with international plans and policies about which we know little or nothing. Congress this coming week also will have several other highly controversial subjects up for debate. The bipartisan attack against the administration's tax proposals is expected to continue, but no major opposition is expected on a bill calling for increased allowances for the families of fathers in the armed services. And last night, Torpedo Squadron 8, which put up such a gallant fight during the Battle of Midway, came back in the news. The Navy Department announced that this already famous aerial squadron had received a second presidential unit citation for its outstanding performance in another theater of operations. The award was given to Torpedo 8 as a part of the 1st Division of the United States Marines Reinforced. They were cited for their outstanding gallantry and determination in pressing home the invasion of Guadalcanal, which started last year on August 7th. Torpedo 8, previous to that time, had won its first citation for its action in the Battle of Midway. In that action, all 15 planes of the group which were operating from the carrier Hornet were lost. Only one man of that group survived, Ensign, now Lieutenant George Gay, of the United States Navy Reserve, Houston, Texas. Torpedo 8 thus becomes the first command in the United States Navy to receive 2 presidential citations. And in announcing this most unusual recognition, the Navy also revealed that a new group has been commissioned which will carry on the famous name of the 8th. Here at our CBS microphone is a member of that first group. He was that sole survivor of the attack at Midway. And Lieutenant George Gay, what would you like to say to the new Torpedo Squadron 8?
What I'd like to tell them most is that the old bunch of the original squadron would welcome the opportunity that the new ones are going to get. We were fighting a defensive war at Midway, and the group that operated on Guadalcanal, while supporting the landing operations, also were dealing primarily with the question of keeping the Japs from coming back. To the new 8th, then, they'll probably get that chance that we would have welcomed, a chance to go on the offensive and carry the fight to the Japs. That is when the fight will really begin.
Well, in other words, Lieutenant Gay, that's when Squadron 8 will be able to carry out its motto and attack.
That's right, and that's what we did when we saw the Japs at Midway.
What happened to you after you were fished out of the water following that attack?
Well, I came back to Hawaii and was in the hospital for a while, just long enough to miss the group that went to Guadalcanal. That group, incidentally, was really part of the original squadron. When the war broke out, we were all in Norfolk. We received orders to go to sea, but we had nothing but some old planes. We were expecting some new ones, and about half of the squadron was left behind to fly them out to the ship when they were received. It was this group which, for the most part, missed the action at Midway, but then went down to the Solomons, where for 14 weeks they helped hold the Japs during the darkest days of that campaign. During that time, they were officially credited with 40 attack missions. Among other things, they hit with torpedoes 1 Jap battleship, 5 heavy and 4 light cruisers, 1 destroyer, and 2 aircraft carriers. That group was finally relieved. I just came back with another squadron, which took over some months after they left. But by the time we got there, the picture was much brighter, thanks to the magnificent work of my former comrades. To Swede and all the others goes the credit for that.
Well, to you too, Lieutenant Gay, must go lots of praise. And especially in your new job as a tactical instructor with VTB-3 at the Naval Air Station at Jacksonville, Florida. I return you now to Admiral Radio in New York.
On the Russian front, late dispatches say the Red Army has cleared the entire west bank of the Dnieper River bend south of Perelashilov, about 50 miles south of Kiev. The Germans are said to have been driven well to the westward despite their counterattacks with tanks and planes. Pravda, the communist newspaper, says the Germans have been beaten back so far in this sector that the sites of the Russian crossings are already outside the range of German artillery fire. The British Broadcasting Corporation, in a broadcast in German to Europe, said today that 8 Soviet divisions had crossed the Dnieper River in the breakthrough of what Nazi propagandists had insisted would be the German winter line.
China today is celebrating the 32nd anniversary of the Chinese Republic, and Generalissimo Chiang Kai-shek has been formally installed as president. For a direct report from China and an interview with a high Chinese official, Admiral Radio takes you to CBS Chungking. Eric Severide reporting.
It is nearly 2 in the morning here, and the 10th of October is ended. The Generalissimo is now president of China. He repeated the oath of office this morning. I sincerely and solemnly swear that I will comply with the teachings of Dr. Sun Yat-sen, that I will work for the consummation of the Three People's Principles, that I will abide by the laws of the nation, that I will loyally execute my duties, that I will endeavor to recover our lost territory, that I will endeavor to enhance the people's welfare, that I will submit to sanction of law in the event of violation of my oath. I want you to hear now from one of the able modern leaders of the young government which rules this ancient land. He is Dr. T.F. Chung, Director of Political Affairs for the Executive Yuan. Dr. Chung.
This day, the 10th of October, means a great deal to us. On that day in 1911, the Chinese revolutionaries began their campaign against the Manchu, who had ruled over China for 2.5 centuries. The rule of the Manchus was foreign rule. It was also reactionary rule. It was an obstacle to China's progress and modernization. Therefore, the revolution of 1911 shined in the eyes of the Chinese people for national freedom and national progress. This year, the 10th of October, has special significance. Today, Generalissimo Chiang Kai-shek formally assumes the presidency of the Republic. He becomes the head of the Chinese state. Generalissimo Chiang Kai-shek has rendered great services to the Chinese people. The time at my disposal does not allow me to go into detail. I can only call your attention to the greatest of all his services.
That was Chongqing, China. Now Admiral Radio takes you to CBS Honolulu, Webley Edwards reporting.
The weight of the offensive action against the Japanese has definitely shifted from the south and southwest to the central Pacific. This is pointed out by the quick strikes in force against Marcus Island, Torella and the Gilberts, and last Friday's strong attack on Wake Island by carrier aircraft and ship bombardment. While no further details have been released since last Friday's terse communique by Admiral Chester Nimitz, you get the impression here today at Pearl Harbor that Rear Admiral Alfred E. Montgomery's task force gave Wake a severe plastering, and that the Wake offensive was much more than a routine raid. The full story when Admiral Montgomery's fighting ships get back to their base will make good listening. Marcus, Wake, and Torella are, or were, three strong points in the Japs' outer circle in the north, central, and south central Pacific. They form the outer guard of the Carolina and Marshall Islands, and in the case of Marcus, of Japan itself. They have been the eyes of the Jap defenses in that it was possible for the Japs to send out patrols, both by air and sea, that covered a substantial portion of the area through which the Pacific fleet might strike. The most important immediate objective of American forces in the Pacific is still the Carolina and Marshall Islands. The Wake attack, by its strength and powerful strike so near to Japan's inner defense bases, discloses the Pacific Fleet's knowledge of its own strength and its desire to come to grips, the sooner the better, with the Japanese fleet. This is Webley Edwards in Honolulu. I return you now to New York.
Here in our New York studio to discuss the general situation in the Pacific is Columbia's military analyst, Major George Fielding Elliott.
With the withdrawal of the Japanese from Columbangara and Vella Lavella Islands, and their apparent abandonment of Santa Isabel as well, the American hold on the Central Solomons is virtually complete. All our effort in those islands can now be concentrated on the Japanese positions on Bougainville, the last important island standing between our present bases and the main Japanese base at Rabaul, New Britain. Meanwhile, on New Guinea, Australian troops are reported moving overland toward the Japanese staging point at Madang, on the north coast, and further amphibious moves, such as those which brought about the fall of Lai, Salamau, and Finchhoffen, are a possibility of the immediate future. The advantage to be gained here is apparent from the nature of the Japanese position on New Britain. The big Japanese garrison there can be supplied only by sea. It has proven too expensive to supply it directly from Japan, straight down through the Mariana and Caroline Islands by way of Guam and truck. Our submarines and long-range aircraft have taken a heavy toll of Japanese shipping on this route, which has been virtually abandoned in favor of barge and schooner traffic, slipping along the north coast of New Guinea by night from staging point to staging point and gathering at Madang for the last night's run across to New Britain. If Madang falls into the hands of General MacArthur's forces, the Japanese will be thrown back on Weewak, and the length of that last night's dangerous run will be greatly increased. Indeed, once we can establish our aircraft and light surface patrols at Madang, we can almost put a stop to the barge traffic altogether. The Japanese must then accept the virtual isolation of Rabaul, or they must return to their old and expensive plan of supplying that base by ocean convoys. This will be especially embarrassing to them at this moment, because an Allied attack on Burma seems to be impending. Burma, too, can be supplied from Japan only by sea, and the run from Japanese ports to Rangoon is the longest sea route which Japanese shipping must follow. Thus, again, we are reminded we are fighting a global war and that each move we make affects every other.
Out in St. Louis, the Yankees and Cardinals took the field for their fourth World Series game before a capacity crowd of 34,000 fans. Max Lanier is pitching for the Cardinals and Marius Russo for the Yanks. The score is 0-0 in the last half of the second inning. Now here's Warren Sweeney with a word from Admiral Radio.
You've heard many stories on this Admiral program of the part radio is playing in battle actions. Here is an example of a personal service available to our fighting men through the use of radio, one that brings them a little closer to the folks at home. It is not possible for men overseas to send their surplus funds home by radio. All they need do is turn the money over to a personnel officer. The information is radioed to a finance office in this country, and a check is in the hands of the payee in a few days. In a single week, over 9,000 men made use of this service to send home sums totaling over $1 million. Admiral Radio is today devoting its entire output to these men of our fighting forces. To you on the home front, however, there is this assurance. When victory has been won, Admiral, in peacetime the world's largest manufacturer of radio phonograph combinations with automatic record changers, will again return to civilian production. The knowledge gained now in building weapons of war will be yours in the Admiral of tomorrow, America's smart set. With thousands of doctors and nurses going overseas each month, much of the responsibility of protecting the health of our people must rest with the women of America. If you can spare 10 hours a week, sign up for a Red Cross Nurses Aid course. If you have but 2 to 4 hours, enter a class in home nursing. You can perform a wartime service by relieving our doctors and nurses on the home front. And the knowledge you gain may save the life of your child or husband. Contact your local Red Cross chapter today. World News Today is brought to you each Sunday at this hour by Continental Radio and Television Corporation, makers of Admiral Radio, America's smart set. Be sure to listen again next Sunday when Admiral brings you World News Today by shortwave, direct from leading news centers of the world. Warren Sweeney speaking. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
This is the WBBM Air Theater, Wrigley Building, Chicago.